These are the words of Wendell Berry, and this particular collection of his words you can find in the back of our hymnal, which is why there's a number next to this reading in your order of service. These words are actually several of his poems, lines from several poems pulled out and woven back together. And he dances with many of the same themes over and over again. So this works beautifully. And it's a lovely invitation into how he lives in the world. We clasp the hands of those that go before us and the hands of those who come after us. We enter the little circle of each other's arms and the larger circle of lovers whose hands are joined in a dance. And the larger circle of all creatures passing in and out of life who move also in a dance. Move in a dance to a music so subtle and vast that no one hears it except in fragments. This is a reading by Barbara Walker from Life Prayers. Thousands of years of history have passed, and during all that time, human beings have fought, killed, plundered, and wronged each other in every possible way. Of such stuff, history is made. But also, during that time, other human beings have quietly and patiently persevered. Persevered in the development of the arts and crafts, inventions, ideas, programs. And from these millions of creative persons, most of them unnoticed and unknown, unnoticed in all of the upheavals of history, these people have come up with the good and the lasting things in the sum of human culture. I have been following the story of the Standing Rock gathering camp since it started. It's one of those things that I sort of became aware of it in the summer, and I wasn't sure if it had just started or if I had just noticed it. And then we talked about it in church when the pipeline easement was denied, and there were a couple of weeks, you might remember, where everyone, including I think the people at the camp, were wondering, well, what do we do now? And what they did at Standing Rock was to put out the fire that they had kept burning since they started their encampment. And then almost immediately light a new fire. So the old fire had been called Osete Sakowain, which is the fire, the council fire. And they put that fire out, and they lit a new fire, which was named the Fire of the People. And that camp there that is holds a spiritual center for people protecting water and protecting the earth changed from being a council fire to being a people fire. And then a few weeks later, they announced that some version of that camp is going to become a permanent settlement. Now, it probably won't be exactly where it is now, because where they are right now is actually a floodplain, and they've already started to make plans to move the camp, because when the spring melt happens, everything that's there will become garbage in the river. which they don't want. So they have a new location that they'll probably move to and become a center for educating and, I think, grounding people spiritually in their work for the earth. And it's interesting that they must have known this is where they were going when they put out one fire and then lit the fire called the fire of the people. And so they're changing the shape of who they are and how they interact with the world. But some of the most fundamental things about Standing Rock are the same. I don't know if you followed it over the summer and into the fall when 500 different indigenous groups came to Standing Rock from around the world, which is one of the largest gatherings of indigenous people, I think, ever. And all five of the Sioux tribes were gathered there at one time, which has not happened since they were defeated at Wounded Knee. They just haven't been able to overcome their internal tensions and fighting to be together until this time. So we're aware of the pipeline and the fight for clean water, and there's this other thing happening, the spiritual work of people coming together, people finding each other despite years and years of being at odds with each other or just not being able to find their way back to each other. Just what happens when violence is visited on people, they often can't find each other again. See that everywhere, and particularly in the Sioux in this case. So what's happening at Standing Rock, and I guess I should call it around the people's fire now, is that a whole series of people have come there and have really stood together, have literally stood together, sometimes in the water, praying for the sacred sites. Did you see those pictures of this summer of the people standing together in the water, facing the police? But most of all, they were standing in the water to pray for the water and for the sacred sites. And then you've seen the pictures of the people facing the police on the bridge. And when they're doing that, they're praying and they're standing right together. Just, I really appreciated it this morning when the choir gathered up here, and then the choir all went and just got right shoulder to shoulder together. And I think that's what I'm talking about today, that moment when the choir took one step closer and really touched shoulder to shoulder, stood together. I think that's the power of what's happened around that people's fire in North Dakota, that people have stood together. And there has been a huge amount of work happening at that camp of reconciling people with each other. We see these very public moments, but there's just been huge work of people finding each other, reconnecting and grounding in a spiritual awareness of the world. So the other time this week when I was with people shoulder to shoulder was when I visited the mosque in Dover. How many of you are aware that there is a mosque in Dover? Have you gotten to go to it? I'm going to go now and come with me. Not all at once, it's a small place, but but it would be wonderful. I would love to take you there. I went with the minister from the Congregational Church in Greenland, who's been going for a year or two. He goes most Fridays at 1 o'clock. And it's a little storefront. You wouldn't know it was there unless somebody took you with them, really. And it's an office space that they've rearranged, and now it's a place for prayer and community. And of course, there are two rooms, and most of the men go to this room, and most of the women go to this room. And it was asked that I cover my head, which I did. And we can have the conversation about sexism, and first we can have it about our own culture, and when we get that all sorted out, we can start the next conversation. But I did sit in the back of the room that's mostly where the men are, and which is fine, and listened to a sermon which alternated between two languages. So I understood some of it, because I wasn't always sure when the transition happened between the languages. So I was always sort of catching up. But to hear this man talk about sacred stories of struggle, and that's really what he was talking about, was a man who had struggled to live what he believed. In two languages, in this office park in Dover, and to look at the group of people gathered, clearly from at least three continents, probably more than that, but that's what I could tell from how they spoke and what they looked like and how they dressed, that they were from all over the world. There were maybe 40 or 50 men in the room. It was about half the size of this space here. Everyone sat on the floor. And I thought, the world is all gathered here, and they're all sitting on the floor together, listening to this story be interpreted. And then it was time to pray. And I'm sure you've seen pictures of Muslims at prayer together. But what I learned and hadn't understood before was that it's important to be shoulder to shoulder, to actually be right next to the person you're praying with. That when you see Muslim people at prayer, they're not lined up and squinched in together just because they don't have enough space. There's something essential about the praying together, praying arm to arm. And you start standing, and then everyone together folds over, and you put your forehead on the ground together. And then you stand together again. And again, this was all in Arabic, I think. I don't know what was being said, but I noticed what it meant to be just right connected to the people on either side. Whatever theology was being articulated, there was something visceral and essential happening in that moment of prayer. And then after the prayer, people sat around on the floor and talked to each other, and a woman came out with a big bag of bread. She started passing out loaves of bread. I was a baker in my former life, so if someone hands me a loaf of warm homemade bread, that is the holy being passed around. And then she said, "Do we know each other?" It's a small region, town, so probably we've seen each other before. But I'm not sure that we had. Maybe it was just the bakers recognizing each other. But really what I think it was is, if you really stand with people, if you really are with each other, then you recognize something in each other. There's just something familiar in our humanity. And I think that's what she was seeing and asking about. One of many mysteries we will never know the answer to. But it was interesting to me to be with a group of people who are under threat in our country right now, and to have that moment when it was so easy to stand together, to be one people. And one of the people in that community who really helped me make contact was a woman who was born in New Hampshire, nearby here, I think. Lived in Canada for a while, where she met her husband, who's Muslim, and then they came back here. So she's one of those people who can pass in the world. She's white, and she is German heritage, and she moves between worlds very easily, and I think therefore interprets the worlds to each other, and does so with real grace. So when you come with me, you'll get to meet her too. And so I hope that this is a community with whom we can collectively make some contact, build some relationship, just be together, no particular agenda except that it's good to stand together. And our stewardship group in our congregation, the people who think about how do we hold on to the people who came before us and hold on to the people who come after us. And important part of that is money. Have thought, you know, this is a year when we talk about money that we really want to talk about standing together, that we stand together with the past and the future and here in this present moment that we are in. And they want us to talk about money in our community in the way that it serves the spiritual work, the justice work, the ways that we reflect deeply together, because money is only meaningful insofar as it supports us being and standing together. So after watching Standing Rock and standing with the people at the Dover Mosque, I've been thinking about the three words of "we stand together." Because the "we" gets interesting. It's so good to have a community, a collective, a people who recognize you, who you feel like, these are my people. And it is part of our work as Unitarian Universalists to always be thinking, who else is we? Who else is right at the edge of the circle that we have formed? Who else do we want to very intentionally put the circle around? Who is here that we're not noticing, even though they're right here? So when we say we stand together, who is the we? And so I think that we is always moving in this tension between the people we recognize as our people and feel closely and deeply connected to, and the stranger who might come through the door someday, who's never been here before, who might need us to say, oh, do I know you? Stand, we stand together. Well, the metaphor of standing means to present yourself with conviction, to be public, to be countable, to be active and firm. And it's good to mention that there are plenty of people in the world who can't physically and literally stand, for whom being on their feet and upright is not how they show that they are present with conviction, public and countable. So I want to acknowledge that diversity in our experience in the world, that standing, just like all of our physical engagements in the world, is complicated. And I think in this present moment, metaphorically standing together, being public and countable together, being visible, is essential to our spiritual integrity and to the well-being of our world. And of course, it is one thing to stand up, just one person in a crowd, in a street, and another thing to stand together. You feel the difference in every part of your body if you are standing with people. When I was in the mosque, it was clear that there were people from many different cultures and that they had different expectations and ideas of what was normal and correct. When people arrive in a room in an office park from all over the world and have to negotiate that fairly quickly, the differences are apparent and the process of negotiation is both apparent and more clearly needed. And they had clearly found what it was that was most important about being together and worked out that variety of perspectives. And the thing is, it's just as true here and in any place where you gather more than one person in a space, that there's a variety of ideas and perspectives. And it's been true at Standing Rock. The tribes who had had difficulty making contact with each other, who needed to do a lot of reconciliation work. And I think there has been a lot of reconciliation work going on at Standing Rock between Native people and white people. There has been disagreement about what's the next choice, what's the next step, what's the best way. And they keep figuring it out. They spend time hearing the variety of perspectives and living into what's next. So both of these communities model for us that together does not mean that we always agree with each other. That disagreeing is part of being together. That, in fact, we're probably more together if we're actually disagreeing, because it means that we're sharing who we are and what we want in the world. We're letting people see our perspective and learning to see other people's perspectives. Francis David, a Unitarian of the 16th century in Europe, said, "We need not think alike to love alike." Those words show up on the front of our building periodically. Those are good words to know by heart, just like the chalice story and simple gifts. We need not think alike to love alike. Our work in the community of whoever is in the room at the moment, and our work in the larger circles of our lives, don't always have to be about thinking alike, or always making sure that everyone feels good. Our work here is to love each other and to love the world. And to quote our American Universalist ancestors, we are here to love the hell out of the world. If you are new, Universalism makes the claim that God is a loving God, and God takes all people back into that loving embrace. And I think probably contemporary universalism would say all beings are taken back into that loving embrace, and that the concept of hell, there doesn't need to be some hell because there's enough suffering in this world, and that our role is to bring love. That is the whole work of our tradition. In the world, we try to be together and love whoever we meet, however difficult that is. Keep trying to find a way to see that common humanity. If a person walks through the door that we don't know, if it's someone we don't know out in the world or someone we do know out in the world, to just keep thinking we stand together. That is the work of always reaching for our common humanity, no matter the challenges presented to us. That is the most important work, especially now.